Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, Chris Evans here. Thank you for downloading this week's podcast, The Best of the Breakfast Show from Virgin Radio with Sky. Coming up, the hilarious Ramesh Ranganathan chatting, filming the Ranganation from his garage and the announcement of his brand new book. The oh so chatty Alan Carr discussing his brand new ITV Saturday Night Game Show. The peerless John Pienaar tells us all about the upcoming summer launch of Times Radio, plus creator of Sky's Gangs of London, Gareth Evans, extreme athlete and all-round nice guy, Ross Edgley, wildlife filmmaker Patrick Ayi, and so much more on the way. But Vassos, who's the first guest?
Despite the lockdown, it fortunately remains as hard as ever to find something on the telly not starring our next guest. There's still Rob and Ramesh Versus. There's a new series slated, a new book coming out, plus the Ranganation, which continues on Sunday. Please welcome a man who brings elation to the population, though he may need a vacation. It's Ramesh Ranganathan.
All right, thank you very much indeed. Good morning, Ramesh.
Good morning, Chris. How are you?
Well, I'm very well. Well, I'm very chipper today. How are you doing this morning?
I'm good. I'm very good, thank you. Okay. Yeah, great.
It's for people who don't know about the Ranganation. So you're virtual, you're online, you're in your garage, and you're genuinely recording the show now in your garage. But I've got to tell you that whoever set that studio up has done a fantastic job.
I could not believe it, because obviously we had to do it social distancing, and you know, some guys just dressed up like the end of ET came to the to the garage to start doing it up and everything, and we couldn't go anywhere near it. And then they sent me a photo afterwards. I could not believe that was the garage. They've done an amazing job. It's great.
Yeah, and you sit there, you know, under lockdown, you sit there at the beginning of your own show and you do your weekly monologue, and I can see the disbelief in your eyes that you are actually next to the house in which you live.
I know. I mean, my family have such little respect for what I do anyway. And now when I say I'm just popping down the end of the driveway to do my show, it really does feel a bit pathetic.
But right now, it's great. Last week was hilarious. You have your 20, is it 25 virtual Ranganation citizens?
Yeah, between 20 and 25.
Okay, 20. I think it was 25 last week, wasn't it? Yeah. And your mum's superstarring as always. So what's this about Rob Beckett, who was also guest starring on your show last week? What is it about Rob Beckett? Has he become your mum's carer? Is he her full-time carer? Well, how's that work in that relationship?
Well, because mum is in so many of my shows, Rob thinks it's very funny to try and get closer to my mum than me. That's essentially his ongoing thing. So whenever we're doing a thing where it's all three of us, he's constantly like buttering her up and just going, "Oh, I love you, Shanty," and all this sort of stuff, just to wind me up, really. And she loves him. She actually does find him funnier than she does me, which is, and she's very honest and open about that. So that's good to know.
But what I love, do you know what I love, Ramesh? I love the fact that you find Rob really funny as well, and you can't help it. And I can tell that you don't like the fact you find him so funny.
I do try my best not to give him anything at all. You know, yeah. When people talk about people being generous and being a good laugher and being gracious, I try my best to be the absolute opposite of that with Rob if I can.
Okay, how close are you? Is he in your top five best mates in real life nowadays, Rob?
Oh, yeah, 100%. Yeah, definitely. I mean, we started doing stand-up together and, you know, on paper, doesn't look like we should hang out at all. But you know, I got to know him through doing comedy. We went through the same kind of milestones in our careers at the same time, and we've just become very, very good friends. So it's amazing to be able to do the show with him.
And the Ranganation itself coming for us again on Sunday morning. Now, Sunday evening, rather, 9:15, BBC Two. So when that hits the air, we'll be 2 hours, 45 minutes away in the UK from being able to meet up with a couple more people than we can now, not only in parks, but also in one of our own gardens. Who might be the first family? The first other household the Ranganathan household meets up with?
Well, I thought we were going to meet up with my mum, but she on the
she's meeting up with Rob, I would imagine.
Well, I expect so, yeah. But she said that last night during lockdown she's discovered that she really enjoys her own company. and she's not that fussed about meeting up with people anymore. So I don't know if it is going to be her, which is a bit of a result for me, actually. It means there's another space freed up.
And what is your sense? What is your inner barometer telling you about how you feel about lockdown? I know where we are, and I know what responsibilities we all have upon us, especially where tracking and testing and tracing is concerned. I think that's all hugely important. But I just feel like today's a real turning point.
I do as well. I've got to be honest, I have mixed feelings about it, because it does feel like a turning point, and you think, okay, well, this is exciting, the things that we're going to be able to do. But at the same time, that you can't help feeling anxious about it all, and you get nervous that I hope this is all being managed properly and it's not too much too soon. But at the same time, at the beginning of the lockdown, even getting to this point felt like an impossibility. You feel so locked into that situation, you think, are we ever going to come out of this? And now it feels like this. I think you're absolutely right. It's the first day it feels like we absolutely are starting to. So fingers crossed. But it's not cut and dried, is it? You feel totally comfortable. Let's throw ourselves into it. You do obviously have a little bit of trepidation that comes along with that.
How long will you stay in your garage for?
Well, look, if it was up to my wife and children, based on the amount of time I've spent with them, that I'll be there permanently, I think. My garage is normally where I go to give my wife a break from me. And now, because it's set up as a studio, I can't do that, which makes things tricky for her. So, right. So I think after lockdown, when we're probably, I think I'm just going to spend a month in there.
Okay.
I think that's what will happen.
All right. What was in there that's had to vacate its space for you?
Do you know what? It's all of the stuff from like tours and show memorabilia and stuff like that I just put in the garage because I didn't put it up in the house. And then when they came to recce the garage to see if they wanted to use it as a studio, it just looked like they walked into this like narcissist shrine where I just put everything to do with myself up in that garage. They came back just going, yeah, that was really revealing, Ramesh. Thanks very much. Really, really interesting insight into your psychology there.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky on Virgin Radio.
Have you, like us, always dreamt of winning a speedboat on the telly? Well, we're in luck, because tomorrow ITV begins Epic Game Show, combining five classic shows with one glittering host. So if we play our cards right, we could strike it lucky, hit the bullseye, and talk to the one and only Alan Carr.
Good morning, Alan!
Oh, hello, everyone.
Hello. So you've just been on Zoe's show. You've just been on Zoe's show on Radio 2. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay.
And I couldn't hear her properly. She was down a well, and all I could hear was the technicians talking about what they were having for breakfast. I was having a cocoa pot, and I was like, "Really, I'm here. I'm here."
But you did get to do an interview with her in the end, yes?
Yes, it was very muffled. It was very muffled.
Okay. What questions did she ask that you could just give us the answer to now to save me the bother?
I couldn't hear them. I was just making up. I was just nodding politely, going, yes, that's right.
Yes, I see. Alan, I saw your take on Play Your Cards Right last night. So you get your celebs on, you got your celeb couples, they're playing for charity. How was it filling Bruce's shoes?
Oh, yeah, I could never fill his shoes. I never could. I mean, obviously, he's iconic and legendary, but he is in your DNA. He is Mr. Saturday. Well, he was Mr. Saturday Night. But I felt, and I had to rein myself in, because I was going higher than five. I started doing that shuffle with my loafers, and I was like, no, Alan. But, and even when I was doing balls, I was like, super smashing great. And I was like, no, Alan, this is wrong. But he's just there inside. I felt like I was channeling him.
Yeah. And you get to...
worse people to channel.
I know, but you get to pick as well, because you've not just been gifted one golden format. How many have you got to pick from?
Five. Got Play Your Cards Right, Price is Right, Strike It Lucky, Take Your Pick, and Bullseye. And I filmed them all up in Manchester last year.
Yeah.
I mean, I was absolutely giddy. I mean, it's amazing, isn't it?
Of course it is. And we touched upon this last time you were on the show in person. I said, how's it going to go? Is it the one that goes down best will then go on to become a series in and of itself? Or has that changed that position? Will they all come back, as a compendium again next time around, or what?
you know what it's like on telly. It's ratings, isn't it? I've got a funny feeling in me waters it's going to be play your cards right, because that is just classic.
Right.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
And the thing is, you know, with Bullseye, I watched it on, like, Challenge TV, and it was the old ones are so slow, you know.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
I know we all look back. I mean, it's like, and what about this Bullseye, the one I've just done? The non-darts player are still rubbish. I mean, you'd have a little practice. This is primetime ITV. No, they are still rubbish. I'm like, come on, love.
But I wonder, Alan, I wonder if lockdown has changed the way we perceive. I wonder if we'd watched Bullseye, the old Bullseye, in the last 10 weeks, it might seem all right again, because life slowed down again.
I mean, he goes like, so what are you going for? Current affairs, Jim. And then you've got 10 minutes of them finding the right spot. And then you watch a dart swing. I had this really weird experience. I went to this big tour on TV where we talked about the stuff that's coming up, and there was all these Love Island people in the audience, and I was saying, well, I said, you throw a dart, someone goes, here's one, and you could win a speedboat. They were looking at me like I was a moron. Like, why would you do that? I'm like, listen, it's a great show. Tony, but that's what we grew up on.
Yeah, and it's what your mum and dad's watched. And if your mum and dad hadn't watched that, you might not exist. So shut up and get on with it. And So you are giving away a speedboat. I love that still. Where'd you get your speedboat from? What's it like?
I'm not saying they might not win a speedboat. I don't want to spoil it. You'll have to watch. All listen, right. The rating might plummet. I've got to get people still watching it.
Yeah. Okay, listen, Al, we've got to go. If you had to pick one, you would say Play Your Cards Right would win if this was a sort of a competition to go on to a full series.
I just love it.
As far as I can recall, Brucey didn't have to climb up, like, you know, towering ladders to get to the last card turnover. I mean, for people who haven't seen this, it's worth tuning in tomorrow for that alone. You need a parachute, you end up so high.
Chris, I had buns of steel. Honestly, my bum was like two Scotch eggs wrapped in a napkin. Honestly, I look really fit from behind.
To be honest, you look really well from in front. The double-breasted look suits you. It always has done, by the way.
You're very sweet, Chris. Yeah, well, thank you.
Well, you're very sweet too. Alan Carr, thank you very much. Alan Carr's epic game show starts on TV, on ITV. I've seen it. I know who wins. I know how far they get. You tune in tomorrow to find out same.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky on Virgin Radio.
With a career spanning 30 years and roles including chief political correspondent at the BBC, our next guest knows his way round Westminster. But with the brand new Times Radio launching this summer, he's now finding his way around our wireless studios. Please welcome in person the peerless John Pienaar.
Good morning, John.
No idea. It's so great just to be in a studio.
Yeah.
Again, lovely to see you guys. It's lovely just to sit outside and wait to come in and listen to Jerry Rafferty and Baker Street.
We're all reappreciating our jobs, aren't we? Mm. That's what we're doing.
Oh, for sure. I mean, for sure. I mean, there was a time ages ago, just weeks ago, not very many weeks ago, when the idea of just not working seemed like a dream.
Yeah.
The idea of leisure time seemed like, goodness me, how lovely wouldn't that be? Now, I can't wait to stop all this leisure time. It's like being idle rich without the riches bit.
Yeah.
I just want to get back to work and doing what we do, especially, obviously, at a time like this. You know, this is the greatest, biggest story I've never covered in my life. And we're going to be on air quite soon, as you say. I'll be here at my new place of work, just a couple of floors down below you.
It's lovely, isn't it?
It is. It's a lovely little spot.
It's a lovely spot. There's no doubt about that. So if you were on, you know, today, if you had been on Friday, I mean, there's so much to talk about. How would you have handled the Cummings thing?
Well, I mean, it's been a sort of steadily breaking story, hasn't it? And those are always fascinating to cover and fascinating to talk about and for listeners to see them just develop over time. And this story has been changing by the hour. The upcoming story has been changing day to day, hour to hour. And then it ended up with what we saw yesterday, which was absolutely extraordinary. The scene in that rose garden at Number 10 Downs.
Have you been in that garden?
I have. Yeah, I was there many times. I was there when John Major did his dramatic statement and other, and the there was the great coalition. You could go on.
Were you there for the barbecue? Were you there for the coalition barbecue?
I wasn't there for the coalition barbecue. We don't get invited into barbecues like that. We just have to talk about barbecues outside. Don't even get a burger handed out to us. You know? But yesterday was so extraordinary, wasn't it?
Could you see where it was going? Because obviously, you know, you can read between the lines better than most when it comes to this kind of story, this kind of narrative.
Yeah, well, look, where we are now is, I think, Dominic Cummings has done enough to save his political skin. He's used up his credit card. He's maxed his political credit card completely out. So the next big controversy that comes along, he will be toast. But he's done enough this time.
How can you tell that?
By the sense of things, by a number of different ways. I mean, you know from, I guess, for what it's worth, some experience and a little bit of judgment and a bit of guesswork, that there's a time when you can just, when the boil bursts, and you know, and it's very, very messy, or you just find a way to contain it. And yesterday, it felt like enough, and I think it has been enough this time round. I think there are maybe quite a lot of people, maybe more than you might imagine out there, people who are ready to give this guy, cut him some slack, and take the view, look, he did what a father would do when trying to look after his family.
Yeah.
I think there'll be more people, that's my instinct, there'll be more people who don't take that view. And if you go by the kind of mood I was picking up walking around my local park yesterday evening, a lot of those people are going to be blind, annoyed, absolutely out of their mind with anger at Dominic Cummings, the way they felt there was one rule for him, one rule for all of the rest of us. And that's serious enough. But I think most serious of all of this is that I think he's drained away some of Boris Johnson's credit card. I think he may have dented the government's health regime when it comes to trying to protect us against the coronavirus in future. But trust, I think, has been lost. And trust, not like popularity, when trust is gone, it's gone. I mean, I was there in 1992, Black Wednesday. The government, the then major government, lost its economic credibility and it never got it back. I don't think this is quite as bad as that, but I think it's a serious, serious blow at the worst possible time.
You so want to be on the air now, don't you?
Oh, mate. How can you tell?
You're in the zone then. By the way, everybody at Times Radio, Stig Abel, I know Stig's very much involved with things. He's ready to go, this guy. Get him on the air now. Yeah. We'll play a record. You can have him like fresh out of the box.
Yeah, when I'm at home, I've got a dummy microphone that's plugged into nothing. I just talk to that about
stuff. Of course you have. Stuff. Now, because of what's happened with coronavirus, COVID-19 and lockdown and social distancing and all these things that have to have happened, you were probably going to be on the air already now. How any ideas exactly? It's like asking the Premiership when they're going to restart. Do you have a date yet?
No, there's going to be a date, I think, in the next week or so. It's going to be in the summer, so just a few weeks off. And it'll be a relief to me, among others, to hear that date finally announced. It's starting to feel real now. You know, we're getting the preparations ready. We're getting a number of presenters in place. You'll hear about more very, very soon. And a lot of the producers and editors are in place. And trust me, because people listening won't always get this, but I know a lot of these editors from my days at the BBC. These people are so good, it's really hard not to do good radio. And I'm telling you, when we get on air, I'm absolutely confident, as far as what anyone can be, this is going to be something people are going to want to listen to.
Yeah, no, well, you're loading the bases, and you have to load the bases. You have to do that. Look at the names already that we can announce. The line, Asma Mir and Stig Abel, Breakfast Show Monday through to Thursday. Luke Jones and Jenny Kleeman, Breakfast Show Friday to Sunday. Matt Chorley, mid-mornings, Monday to Thursday. Michael Portillo, Friday evening. He's great on the radio.
Yeah.
And most recently announced, Chief Political Commentator of The Sun, Tom Newton Dunn. I love Tom.
Yeah.
He may be the most handsome man in news. I've never met him.
No.
At all. I've never even seen... He works in this building, but I've never even seen him because he works on a different floor. But I love him on the Sky News pay-per-view. That's not a bad starting lineup, is it?
All of those names are, I think, really
Asma
good.
Asma Mir, I mean, come on.
Asma's great, absolutely. People love Asma Mir on and off the air. Tom Newton Dunn, I've known him for many years. He knows his onions at Westminster. You're right, he's got the kind of looks of Alan Bastard, but he's got the nous and the knowledge to talk about politics and know what he's talking about.
He's got a bit of
about.
Simon Templar going on there as well.
Yeah,
he's got a bit of Errol Flynn, my wicked, wicked ways going on there as well. John, good luck. You don't need it, but it's always helpful, isn't it? It's always useful.
You do need it.
Okay. Times Radio launches this summer and John Pienaar at the microphone on drive time. It doesn't get any better.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky on Virgin Radio.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
We've heard from three guests already, but there's still more guests to come. Gareth Evans chats the Sky Original Gangs of London. Filmmakers James Lee Hernandez and Brian David Lazzarte discuss their unbelievable HBO series McMillions, available now on Sky Documentaries. Cuddly action man Ross Edgley tells us about his fascinating book, The Art of Resilience. Nature boy Patrick Aye shares all about the incredible cast of animals he meets in Sky Nature's show Wild Animal Babies. All that coming up. Vassos, who's next?
On YouTube this week, our next guest has been discussing how mongoose mate and how poo shapes relationships. Fortunately, he's on this morning to talk about his new show on Sky Nature, which may just be the cutest thing on television. Please welcome host of the adorable Wild Animal Babies, the equally adorable Patrick Aye.
Good morning, Patrick.
Hey, how's it going, Chris? You're
very right. Very well. Now, you know how to open a brand new season on a brand new show on a brand new channel. Animal Babies, it doesn't get any cuter, does it?
I know. I've just gone straight for the heartstrings.
My goodness me. So, first episode last night, we were treated to baby elephants, baby wildebeest, baby otters, baby kangaroos and baby puffins. And a baby puffin is called a...
Puffling.
Puffling. There's no cuter name for a baby. A blimmin' puffling. Right. So where did you go? Who did you meet? And what did you learn? And what can you tell us?
Went all over the world. So we were travelling to all the continents of the world, trying to find... some of the cutest animals on the planet, but also we're trying to tell the story of how they're able to survive in the wild. That's the thing that people don't really think about, how these cute animal babies, they are super cute, but their lives are fraught with danger from the very beginning. So one of my favorites was going to Australia. We went to this kangaroo sanctuary and meet these adorable joeys. And like seeing a mother kangaroo with a little joey in the pouch, mm-hmm. is kind of, it just blows your, I mean, you saw the show, it just blows your mind at how incredible nature is and all the different strategies, not only the little babies take on, but also the parents.
And you had a sneaky peek inside the pouch before the joey came out, didn't you?
I know. Yeah, so I was at the kangaroo sanctuary with Brolga Barnes, this amazing guy who runs the sanctuary. He's known as Kangaroo Dundee, get that for a name. And so we went around to check out my notes. Can't write this stuff, Chris. And we had the pleasure of being able to look inside the pouch of this kangaroo. And it was just amazing seeing this little joey, this baby, slowly developing in its mother's pouch. The cool thing about female kangaroos is that they can have potentially three kids at any one time at different stages. So usually a mother will have a joey that's out of the pouch, one inside the pouch, which you saw in the show, and then potentially pregnant with a third. So really, really incredible mothers.
We were talking earlier on the show, Patrick, about the fact that, you know, far be it from us to say what our kids need, but we can say what our own kids need or would benefit from. We're talking about, you know, a couple of lessons on seeds, weekly lessons on nutrition and hydration. And I'm serious about all this, you know, and more lessons outside, maybe, you know, whole afternoons outside every week for each class. But, you know, on a Friday afternoon, you know, if you haven't got games, the best ever game for afternoon at school was, you know, games on Friday afternoon. If you could nail games on Friday afternoon, the weekend started early. But for the week, from a mindfulness point of view, for the weekend to start well, wouldn't it be great, you know, if all schools, you know, the last hour of lessons on a Friday, you know, we watch a show together like yours, Wild Animal Babies. And we used to watch on a Sunday, let our kids watch from the week before, 1 week later, 1 week catch up. We used to let them watch Blue Planet and Planet Earth when that was doing the rounds. And it set them up perfectly on a Sunday night for the week and going to bed and thinking about life and how wonderful and amazing things are and about the fact that we're part of this whole, you know, this whole cosmic miracle. And you know, just watching the mummy otter last night protecting her newborn baby and being basically its boat for the first few weeks of its life. I mean, it warms the cockles, it expands the mind, and it fills you with joy and optimism. And
it really does.
I just think we need to get more of these programs on in schools.
Yeah, I mean, I remember being at school and teachers playing different. There was stuff from Dr. Ray Winston, was it? And so I do think that it does help. We should definitely play more of these kind of wildlife documentaries and science documentaries at school. Personally, I was always interested in how things work anyway. So for me, being able to see some of these documentaries where they were telling you really cool scientific facts, or whether they're traveling to different exotic locations and seeing incredible different species and animals, you know, it's a bit of escapism, but you're learning at the same time. So I think that's probably why it sets kids up, because kids love facts. They love facts, and you're also allowing them to kind of escape to this mystical, far-flung land. So, yeah, you're kind of, it's like two birds, one stone, I suppose.
They love facts, they love stories, they love nature, they love adventure, and they love excitement. And, you know, they love a car chase in a movie. Yours get a sort of, you know, animalistic chase here. Don't you always get something like that going on? And I love the fact the whole series of Patrick's show. And you please, if you've got Sky, please watch this. It's amazing. Wild Animal Babies is the name of the whole series, but the episodes are split up into single kids. So all the babies last night were even cooler because they're just singletons. They really need their mums and dads' protection.
Did you know, Chris, that baby elephants have to learn how to use their trunks? When they're first born, their trunk just looks like a like wiggly spaghetti. They're trying to learn how to use this thing, which we don't really think about, which is elephants are known for their trunks, but we don't think that they have to learn. They have to spend several days, weeks, months learning how to use that trunk. Really incredible.
Yeah, and they've got two fingers on the end of the trunk. You talk about the two fingers, and I'd never seen that before. Yeah. And they do have these fingers within the end of the trunk. So episode one, single kids. Episode two, brothers and sisters. Episode three is outnumbered. Well done, Patrick. You're amazing. You can come on the show anytime you damn well like.
Thanks, Chris. Really appreciate it.
No problem. Wild Animal Baby, Sunday 31st of May, 8 p.m. Sky Nature. All episodes will be available on demand.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky on Virgin Radio.
This, people, is the breakfast show that moves seamlessly from the cutest thing on telly to the most brutal. From the adorable Wild Animal Babies on Sky Nature to the ferocious, fantastic Gangs of London, Sky's most talked about, most binge-watched series of the year. And we basically have our next guest to thank for it. Please welcome writer, creator and director, Gareth Evans.
OK, he's got it all going on as far as Gangs of London is concerned. Good morning, Gareth.
Good morning. How are we?
I'm very well. Congratulations, first of all. 2.23 million viewers in just 7 days. Wow, that's not bad, is it?
Yeah, it's okay, yeah. A bit surprising, to be honest. But yeah, it's been quite an overwhelming experience, to be honest.
Okay, and loads of people watching the finale. But of course, now you can watch Gangs of London available on demand if you're late to the Gangs of London party. Where did it come from in you and your co-creator Matt's minds?
So basically, I was living out in Indonesia at the time, and I had an initial concept for a TV show, which would have been about the, you know, an episode starting with the funeral of a mob boss and the power vacuum that comes from that. And the guys at Pulse Films had the rights to an old PSP game called Gangs of London. And I think initially they wanted to do a film franchise with it. But when they pitched it to me, I was more interested in the fact that London's so diverse as a city that we pitched it back to them as long-form narrative, as a TV show, because we felt like it had all the breadth and scope to be fleshed out over 10 hours instead of like one film. And so that was the initial starting point then.
Okay, screenplay versus choreography. What percentages are we talking there? Because there's so, you know, the fight scenes are more like sort of elaborate dance routines, aren't they?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, I would never ever sort of try to script out a fight sequence in its minute detail, because it's impossible to read in that respect. So, you know, a huge part of that is down to like the stunt team then. So like Jude Poyer and his guys, I'll just kind of give them a brief sort of outline of what the fight scene should contain, the environment, the psychology of the characters. And then they go off, because they have all the sort of experience of learning how to do all the things that they can do to the human body. And they'll go off and design that then and then present it to me. And we kind of riff on that and start shaping it together then.
So our show can be more different, you know, from a short form product compared to yours. Obviously, movies are even longer than what you've done. But I mean, you are so in a different place now. So how is it dipping your toe back into the Gangs of London water and talking about it? Because you're very cool about it. But that's the way it is in film and drama, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, like, it's a weird one because it's like the weirdest experience of doing a show like this was that it, you know, for us, it took 3 years of my life. You know, I mean, we spent like a long time sort of doing research and developing the concept, getting people on board to want to make the show in the first place. And then, you know, it was best part of almost 2 years then of production and post-production getting out to release. So the fact that it's out there now and everyone can watch the entire show and some people have been within the space of a day is wild. So, yeah, it's been a huge experience for us all.
How much easier does it make your task as far as making, producing, writing, finding the finance for season two, maybe three, now that season one is a massive smash hit?
I think the conversations are still ongoing.
No
I think
way!
It's like... No. I think it's all kind of positive. I think it's more one of those things whereby we're all sort of taking stock of what the immediate reaction is. Also, it's like, it's only been released so far in the UK. You know, we're waiting for it to hit globally. I know some people are watching it globally, but, you know, it hasn't officially gone out globally yet. But, yeah, so hopefully when it does, we'll start to see, you know, more responses coming from across the pond then.
All right. I mean, it is very brutal. How brutal did it need to be and how brutal did it get to be on screen compared to how much you thought it might be when you were writing and, first of all, sort of blocking it out?
I think it all kind of... it matched what we had planned for it. And we do pretty extensive planning ahead of time. We shoot like a very rough sort of rudimentary version of the action, you know, with just stunt guys in cardboard boxes in a sort of gymnasium room first. So when it comes to the networks, like with Sky and, you know, the producers, we show them what they're getting beforehand. So they have to okay that before we go off and actually, you know, shoot the final product then. In terms of the level of violence, it's one of those things, I guess, we all have our own little personal moral barometers for what we deem okay and not okay. Mm-hmm. And so I just kind of follow whatever my own personal barometer is on that. Hopefully few people follow along with that.
Yeah, you have quite a high threshold, let me tell you.
Yeah.
To say the least, all right. Listen, well done, Gareth. Good luck with season two and season three, and good luck with this brand new movie you're working on at the moment. Can you tell us anything about that in 30 seconds, or are you not allowed to?
Yeah, it's called Havoc, and it's going to be set over Christmas time, and it's a fun, wild, wacky sort of thriller action film.
All right, pal. Good luck. Thanks so much for talking to us. That is Gareth Evans talking about his show, Gangs of London, which is an absolute smash and available on demand now on Sky.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky on Virgin Radio.
For over a decade, we all hoped a Happy Meal could mean a very happy meal with a $1 million prize. But the McDonald's Monopoly game was hijacked by a mysterious crime ring. Digging deep into the mind-blowing story in a six-part docuseries, McMillions, available today to watch on the brand new Sky Channel Sky Documentaries. Its directors, James Lee Hernandez and Brian David Lazzate.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
Good morning. I don't know who's who because I can't see you, but I'll talk to James first. James, please, if you don't mind, pitch the first episode to us as if you were trying to sell us the show as an idea for us to put our money into.
Well, it's almost like I've done this before, but so the story starts off with the FBI getting an anonymous tip, and that anonymous tip is that there is a few individuals that have rigged the McDonald's Monopoly game, and they're all related somehow, and that all leads back to a mysterious character named Uncle Jerry. And so the FBI, led by this very charismatic rookie agent, has to look into this crime and figure out what's happening.
So you have your, David, it's Brian, you have your rookie agent, and now he's partners with an old wise owl who doesn't want to be part of the documentary. However, his presence is palpable just because he was around at the time.
That is correct, yes. Rick Dent was going to be a senior agent who definitely took him under his wing, and you do feel his presence, but yeah, Doug does steal the show for episode one, that's for sure.
And James, you know, when you describe, you know, they get a tip off, right? So there's this scam. Everybody knows about this competition because it's all over the TV, it's all over the radio, it's all over the newspapers and magazines. It was a big thing back in the day. You can win $1 million if you eat a McDonald's and you do this and you play this bingo game. And somebody says, yeah, but somebody's scamming it. And you think, well, A, that's no. Nobody could scam McDonald's out of $1 million. And B, if they are, it'd be so obvious and so easy to discover how they were doing it. How come that wasn't the case?
Well, because the way the scam worked, people were actually winning. It wasn't like money was disappearing and nobody knew where it was going. It looked like it was completely legitimate. And one of the people that claimed it fraudulently, you actually see in episode one, and his story sounds totally legitimate, and McDonald's just thought, hey, the game's working in the way it's supposed to work.
So the first winner in the first episode, a fascinating character. He's so believable, you know, and you have all the original footage, you have all the original investigation, and this guy, he's sitting at home, he can't believe it, I can't believe it, you know, and I checked everything, and then they said you won, and I made the phone call, and they said, yeah, you've won $1 million, and then the FBI investigator says, so what did you do next? And then he perfectly recalls exactly what he did. He went here, he went there. How come he had such a complete backstory?
Not sure exactly how he concocted that backstory, but you know, it was riveting television. You know, the first time that we watched it, it was definitely that mind-blowing experience of like, oh my gosh, how does this even exist? You know, and what crazy idea for the FBI to go undercover and to pretend to be a film crew to do this, you know, fake commercial with the winners and get on camera. And then Doug, of course, like goes rogue, you know, or at least it seems that he's improvising, you know, being out undercover and taking them on field trips to get more from the guy. And it really did make for a riveting moment.
Yeah,
here in our first episode.
Yeah, Brian, I forgot, because I watched the first episode last week. I forgot that your FBI guy, who is in this a lot and he's brilliant, I forgot he goes undercover as a TV producer, which is, how come you've got all the footage? And he went to didn't he hang out with the TV producer to do a little bit of sort of role play research?
What he did was he worked directly with McDonald's and recruited a marketing person from McDonald's. So they had a legitimate person who does this all the time. And he's asking her, like, well, what do I do? What do I wear? And she basically said that, a producer director just looks like they walked off of a golf course. So he wore what he would normally wear golfing. That was about as much research as he did.
And it has to be said, he sort of suits the TV producer role more than the FBI role in the end.
Yes.
All right, guys. So I've seen episode one. There are five more to come. Can you give us a bit of a hook, line, and tease as to where the story might go and how you might get to various stages of it?
Oh gosh, I mean, you know, it just keeps going deeper and deeper down the rabbit hole. You know, episode two flips the point of view. We start to hear from some of the winners, some of their crazy stories. We get to see that the mob is, you know, tied to this. James, do you want to give them the tease for what's happening at the end of the whole series?
Well, you see it from both sides, and then worlds start to collide as the FBI starts to figure out what's happening, and there's some very big things that we reveal at the end that we were, Brian and I were very surprised to learn as we went through this. I mean, we designed the series to look like the way that Brian and I learned the information, as well as the FBI learned in all this information back at the time. So really excited for everyone to be able to see it. And there's some shocking characters along the way.
Okay, lovely. Great, great, great tease. That, love it. That's James Lee Hernandez and Brian David Lazart from California, live there on the line. McMillions is on the brand new Sky documentary. So all six episodes will be available on demand from 12 p.m. today. That's 12 midday today? I suppose it is, isn't it?
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky on Virgin Radio.
He ran a marathon pulling a car. He climbed a rope repeatedly until he reached the height of Everest. He was the first swimmer to circumnavigate Great Britain. And apparently, it was all down to being resilient. Here to teach us the art of resilience through his new book. It's the ridiculously ripped Ross Edgley.
Morning, Ross.
Hello, Ross.
Morning, guys. What an introduction. Wow.
Well, listen, you deserve it, Ross, because you are the man, you are the person who put us on to and actually introduced us to Wim Hof. So thank you once again for that.
I did. That was a nice visit. That was a nice way to spend the morning, wasn't it? All of us hanging out, talking about ice baths. It was a good morning.
So just for people who don't know who Wim Hof is, could you just fill him in, please?
Yeah. So Wim basically is challenging a lot of conventional thought and modern medicine about how we can control our immune system, and holds multiple records for freezing himself in ice cold water. That is the best summary I can give without going into a lot more detail.
Ross, of all the stuff you've done, I mentioned a few of them there, running a marathon, pulling a car, climbing that rope again and again and again. You've also lived with warrior monks in Japan and had a shamanic pain ritual with fire ants in the Amazon jungle. Of all of that stuff, what's the stuff that's changed you most for the better?
Yeah, I think actually probably the swim, just because of the duration of the entire thing. I mean, 157 days, but we worked out. I spent over 2 months just left alone with my own thoughts, staring at the bottom of the seabed, because we were swimming for obviously 12 hours a day. So I think when you're left alone with your own thoughts for that amount of time, just basically being stung by jellyfish repeatedly to the face, you find out a lot about yourself, because you're forced to look inward. And I think in many ways, that's kind of what a lot of people are facing now. It's strange to draw a parallel between the swim and what a lot of people are experiencing. And I think it was that. Yeah, probably the swim.
And Resilience, this new book that you've got coming. Actually, I've known about your book, Ross, for ages, because we shared an editor, Ed the Editor, at HarperCollins. And, yeah. And every time I met him, he told me how brilliant your book was coming along, which was a little bit, not to say very annoying.
Yeah, but he
actually
said the same to Ross about your book. Of course he did.
I wanted him to tell me how brilliant I was. But anyway, Ross, your book is brilliant. You must be very pleased with it, because it's very now, isn't it?
It is, yeah. I think the best thing about the book, because it was 2 years ago since the Great British Swim, and I think the nice thing was, is whilst a lot of people are so incredibly kind and saying that, you know, I was really strong or resilient and all the rest of it, I think what's nice about the book is we reverse engineer and deconstruct the entire swim to show that there's nothing special about me. And actually, a lot of the strategies available in the book that we teach, it teaches that we've all got this innate power inside all of us. I say that resilience is the strategic management of suffering. And throughout the entire book, we show how that is actually the case. And that's what's been the nicest thing, that I hope people read it and just say, oh, okay, I understand that, you know, I can actually do my own version of the Great British Swim. I can, you know, go and run an ultra marathon, which Vassos, you'll understand, you know, run the London Marathon in the hottest summer we've ever had, Chris. You know, you guys understand it, and hopefully other people will too.
It's that great book, and I reread it this weekend after watching the first 2 hours of The Last Dance, which is called The Men on Magic Carpets by Ed Hawkins. And he talks about us all having superpowers. We really do have. I mean, to be alive, to be born anyway, I mean, that's truly magical. But he says we all have inner superpowers. And, you know, in America, they've taken this to a different level, especially in sports, because, you know, billions of dollars are at stake. And they find people's superpowers and they bring them on. Can you communicate with that thought?
I love that, Chris. Yes, exactly that. I think one thing that we talk about within the book, and it sounds a little bit morbid, but on the swim, I was actually researching a lot of coping strategies that prisoners of war would use to cope with just this sheer sensory deprivation and isolation. And there was one, Admiral Stockdale, who read Stoicism. He was a big advocate of Stoicism, which is an ancient Greek philosophy to teach you to keep in check of your emotions in adverse conditions. And what Stockdale did, he survived 7 years in this prisoner of war camp in Vietnam, in the most horrific conditions you can imagine. And they coined this phrase, the Stockdale paradox, because his coping mechanism was basically this. It was to make sure that you never lose sight of hope. You can never lose sight of hope. And on the GB swim, I knew that if I kept putting one arm in front of the other, I would come all the way around Great Britain. So never lose sight of hope. But exactly the same time, you have to face up to the current reality. And it was this kind of dual thought process that I used throughout the entire swim, that when I was being stung by jellyfish, my tongue was falling off from saltwater exposure. That was my current reality, and I had to face up to that. But equally, at the same time, never lose sight of hope. You know, if you keep putting one arm in front of the other, you will come to Margate. And I think that superpower we all have, we're all able to tap into. And that's a big theme within the book.
Great stuff, Ross. Hopefully we can meet up and catch up over a run or a cup of coffee or something a bit stronger soon.
100%. I'd love that, Vassos. Thank you, mate.
Ross Edgeley, The Art of Resilience. It's very good. My editor says so. It's published on Thursday.
So there must be a copy in the building then.
Well, I mean, I've known all about it ever since, you know, he started writing it.
Yeah, I'm talking about the rest of us, not you, Vassos. Well done, Ross.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky on Virgin Radio.
Up next, we're speaking to Secretary of State for Health and Social Care, Matt Hancock. Good morning, Matt.
How are you?
I'm very
well.
How
are you? The floor drove problem. Oh, my goodness.
Well, you see, you were halfway there with your Newcastle shirt in your office, which was hung up over your left shoulder, and you very, very kindly put up for auction for Scrubs Glorious Scrubs. And it went for loads and loads of money. It went to Steve Pretifer for £1,850. But there was a part three to the story, wasn't there? There was a conclusion to that particular story.
He's kindly given it back to me. So I'm thrilled. So I've still got my shirt, and charity's got almost £2,000. So it worked out well for everybody. Thank you very much, Steve.
What's the most important thing you can tell us today, please?
Well, I'm on today because we've brought in a new system, which is called NHS Test and Trace. And this is all part of trying to contain coronavirus and trying to deal with coronavirus by saying that if you get symptoms, then you need to get a test. And if you test positive, we're going to get in contact with you, ask you who you've been close to, and then get in contact with them and ask them to isolate. So if you get a call from NHS Test and Trace and are asked to isolate, then please do so for up to 14 days. And we know this is a big ask, but by this targeted approach, we think it'll be far better than the blanket lockdown that we've had. And we'll be able to release some of those measures and keep people safe.
Right, now, I didn't get this last night. I get it completely now. It's taken me 12 hours to get it because it's just suddenly clicked, like my dad taking the stabilisers off my bike. And, you know, it was one of those moments. I get it now. We talked to a listener who was in Australia at 6:45 this morning, who's originally from Woking and just called the show just to say hello because she can't come and see her family in May like she'd planned to. And then I just got onto a conversation with her about how Australia's doing, the 3 or 4 weeks ahead of us and this whole COVID-19 experience. And she was talking about track and trace, and it's out there. And I said, you know, Australian citizens, it's your choice. You can volunteer to download this. She said, well, most people just have, because we just want to be part of the solution as opposed to adding to the problem.
Yeah, well, that's right. So the vast majority of people in the trials that we've done do exactly what they're instructed to, asked to by the NHS. And of course you would, right? Because it's like when a doctor calls and says you need to isolate, in this case, it's for everybody's health, the public health, rather than for yours. But if a doctor asks you to isolate at home, that's what you do. And so I've got a lot of confidence that this will work and people will do what they're asked. But it's just really important because it's such a big change. And if you think about it, we brought in all those lockdown measures in March, a big change for people's lives. And then we've been slowly able to lift some of them. But this is the first big new lockdown type measure, but it's an individual lockdown, not a national lockdown, based on the risk you've got of having the virus.
Okay, and so psychologically, Matt, can you, because, you know, there every now and again we get some good news. You know, there's lots of great things happening with great people, and that's amazing. And so many discoveries have been made about how closer we are now than we ever thought we were, and we perhaps were always, we just didn't realise it, and that's all good. Picnics are back, and that's fantastic, and conversations are back, and people have more time for each other, and we should give each other more space on the pavements anyway. That just feels better anyhow, maybe not 2 metres in the future, but, you know, the more space you get physically, the more space you feel psychologically, you feel more relaxed, you feel that you can respond as opposed to reacting, you can feel like you have the choice not to react or respond at all, and you walk on by certain worries and situations that otherwise might cause flashpoints. Is there a psychological policy, in a number 10, where there is good news that might be coming sooner, but you sort of, like my mum and dad, they used to say, well, we think, you know, you've asked for a bike, but we're not quite sure whether we can make it up to a bike this Christmas. But they knew all along that actually I was going to get a bike. Are there, because it feels to me like you're saying things might not be attainable, but probably will be. You just don't really want to tell us yet because you don't want to ruin our Christmas.
We're just trying to be as absolutely straight as and answer the questions as best we possibly can. And so, you know, that my view has slightly shifted on holidays, for instance, and I'm quite open about that. I am a little bit more optimistic than I was. We're cautious, for instance, on there being a vaccine because the science is uncertain. But that doesn't mean that I don't hope and plan and work for it to happen. But I think there's a broader point, which I know you've touched on the show a few times, which is that I hope we learn something about ourselves and as a society as well, you know, from this. It's been a terrible experience in many ways and obviously catastrophic for some people. But I hope that through the lockdown we learn how to live better, how to maybe have a bit more respect for each other, look after ourselves a bit. And I just hope that we can also learn positive things from this extraordinary experience, as well as, of course, of trying to get back to the things that make life worth living.
All right, Matt. If you, I don't know if you have a crystal ball. I bet you wish you had a crystal ball. But if you did have a crystal ball, what do you think you might be on to talk to about us in a week or a couple of weeks' time? What's going to be the next step as far as you're concerned? What's the next big slice of information you hope to be imparting via this show and shows like this show?
Yeah, well, this afternoon we've got a meeting to discuss whether we can go to the next stage and whether the five tests have been met and whether there's any more of the restrictions that we can lift. We obviously wanted to get the test and trace program in place first because that gives us more assurance. So that's what I'll be looking at for the rest of today.
All right, have a great day. Godspeed. Thank you very much indeed.
Good stuff.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky on Virgin Radio.
Thank you so much for listening to this, the podcast of the Virgin Radio Breakfast Show. Don't forget you can subscribe and get it every week from wherever you get your podcast, and you will never miss the weekly roundup of all the best bits from our Virgin Radio Breakfast Show with Sky.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.